Queen Felicity sat alone in her empty court and thought how small it made her feel. The great hall had been built centuries ago to house a great host of knights and heroes and warriors, but they were long gone. Even the land's last few heroes, those brave men and women who fought in the Demon War, were mostly gone. Fill the court with a few hundred politicians screaming their heads off, desperate for their voices to be heard, or at the very least to be sure of drowning out their opponents, and then the court seemed alive and vibrant, even powerful. But more and more, that seemed to Felicity to be nothing more than an illusion. All the raised voices did was give her a headache. Felicity was isolated. No one even wanted to plot with her anymore. She only held on to the regency because no one felt strong or secure enough to take it away from her. So now she sat alone in an ancient hall on a carved wooden throne that had once been the seat of legends, planning one last desperate throw of the dice, one last reckless gamble to find out who her true friends and enemies were and perhaps reestablish her authority. She never wanted to be queen. Marrying Harold was her father's idea. Felicity never wanted the responsibility. But now she had to be queen, because someone had to save the land before warring factions tore it apart. Felicity gently massaged her aching temples with her fingertips.
I never wanted to be anybody's savior. Why does it have to be me? Because there is no one else, Felicity. Because you're the one on the throne. Because you accepted the job, and now you have to prove yourself worthy of it.
The great double doors swung slowly open, and the warrior woman, Callie, entered the court. She had to struggle with the doors by herself. The usual guards had been dismissed. This particular court session was strictly private. Callie approached the throne. She was wearing her best leather armor, all buffed and shining, and her hand rested on the pommel of her sheathed sword.
Everyone we can reach has been contacted. All the messengers have been bribed to complete secrecy and promised a horrible death by me personally if they screw this up. Even so, it won't be long before word gets out. You can't hold a special invitation-only court at this late hour of the evening and not have someone notice.
They can suspect what they like.
Felicity stirred uncomfortably on the wooden throne as she tried to find some sitting position where her buttocks wouldn't go to sleep. The forest throne had been designed to be impressive, not comfortable.
By the time people have realized what's going on here, this meeting will be over, and I'll know where I stand. And I hope what to do next.
She started to fit a cigarette into her long holder, then gave up because her hands were shaking too much. She couldn't afford to look nervous.
Blast! Do you think they'll all come?
Curiosity should bring most of them, but whether you can make them listen is another question. What will you do if this doesn't work out? Would you resign as regent?
Would I? Oh, hell! Give my son over into the hands of some damned politician? No, I'd grab Stephen and a box full of jewels and head for the horizon first. Leave the forest to stew in its own messes. But I won't do that until I absolutely have to. As long as there's even a hope we can work things out, I'll stay. It's a good land. It deserves saving. It has such potential. Certainly more than Hillsdown ever had under my father. So let's try to be optimistic. At least some of the people coming are supposed to be my friends, or at the very least loyal to the throne. And those who are my enemies can perhaps still be made to see sense.
You really think so?
Callie took up her usual position at the Queen's right hand.
They have to listen. There's too much at stake for us to indulge our egos anymore.
Never thought I'd hear you say that.
Times are hard indeed if I'm the land's last hope.
She stretched slowly, arms above her head.
I feel tired. My corset's the only thing that's holding me upright. And I've still got the day's paperwork to go through after this is finished. There are people in the salt mines who work fewer hours than I do. Of course, they don't get to wear such pretty clothes.
Felicity rubbed at her eyes.
Coming here was never my idea. But if I have to be queen, I'll be a queen they'll never forget. I can't let my authority be undermined any further. Someone has to take charge of the court. Right now, there are too many politicians chasing too many causes, and they're tearing the land apart. No decisions are being made, and nothing that needs to be done is being done. The whole infrastructure of the country is breaking down just because no one at the court can agree on how to share out the toys in the sandbox.
Felicity looked at Callie.
That's what I'm going to hit them with. Does it sound convincing?
Very convincing. Very concise, very sharp. You're natural, Fliss. Should have been a politician.
Mind your language. Still, I didn't spend all those years in my father's court and not learn anything. I could teach this court a lot about the subtle arts of conspiracy. Dear Daddy would have had me exiled or killed like Julia if he'd suspected even half of what I was up to. And I learned a lot from listening to my father's speeches. Say what you like about him. He understood the value of a good speech. Always hired the very best writers. I could do with a few of them here. Harold always wrote his own. Wouldn't be helped in anything. Typical of the man. Who do you think will support me, Callie?
Sir Vivian is loyal to the throne and to you. Same with Alan Chance. Hawk and Fisher are close with the Questor, so they'll probably follow his lead. Tiffany's a witch, so her main loyalty is always going to be to the Sisterhood. She'll probably have to check back with the Academy before she can commit herself to anything. But since she and Chance are so sweet on each other, odds are she'll side with him unless or until she's instructed otherwise. Oh, young love. The three so-called Landsgraves, Morrison, Esther, and Pendleton, are vicious little backstabbing toads who don't give a damn for anyone's interests but their own. But just maybe you can bribe or intimidate them into doing the right thing for once. Your father will do what he will do. As for your last choice, who knows what the Majors will do?
We need him. He's our only defense, our only weapon against the growing forces that threaten the forest land. If we can get him to commit to the throne,
that's a hell of a big if.
Then no one else would dare attack us directly. And if the Blue Moon really is on its way back, you can be sure that bunch of self-abuse experts in the Magic Users Hall won't be enough to save us.
I don't know that the Majors is necessarily up to it either. All right, he created the Rift. But in all the time he's been here, he hasn't done a single damn thing about the inverted cathedral.
One problem at a time. I have to concentrate on one thing at a time or I'll go crazy. Sometimes I wonder if I'm strong enough to be queen.
You have to be. Because all the alternatives are worse.
How the hell did I end up here? I spent all my youth fighting authority, and now I'm queen. Do all children become their parents?
Now there's an idea. Take a leaf from your father's book. Declare war and invade Hillsdown. Or Redheart. Nothing brings a country together like a good war.
You're really not helping, Callie.
Sir Robert Hawk, once a blade master and a hero famed in song and legend, but now only a minor politician with a largely discredited background, sat alone in his quarters.
To hell with all of them. To bloody hell with the world.
It had been a long, hard day, and it showed no signs of being over yet. His desk stood piled high with assorted crumpled papers, information his carefully chosen and bribed sources thought he ought to know about. The Duke was a threat. Hawk and Fisher were intimidating. But Jericho Lament was genuinely scary. Everyone had heard a story about the Walking Man's never-ending vengeance, and everyone in the castle had something to feel guilty about. People were talking anxiously in private and in public, and preparing for the worst. No one believed he was just in the castle to deal with the inverted cathedral. Lament came after guilty men. Everyone knew what he'd done in the Hall of the Magic Users. Conspirators were gathering together and saying, "Now or never. Strike now, or we may never get another chance." No one was actually saying civil war yet, but it was in everybody's thoughts. Sir Robert scowled. If civil war did break out in the forest, there'd be so many sides, so many factions, the fighting would drag on for years. It would tear the land apart, split up families, set neighbor against neighbor. The land would be reduced to burnt-out villages and blood-soaked fields. And God alone knew who'd be left alive to see the end of it.
Why the hell did we fight the demons? We're going to destroy everything anyway.
He hadn't fought in the Demon War all those years ago, putting his life on the line again and again to see the land he loved and fought for destroyed in a stupid, needless war. There had to be a way to stop this insanity before it all got out of hand. There had to be something he could do if he wasn't so damn tired. He needed some sleep. Even a nap would help. To just lie down, stretch out, and relax, if only for a while. But he couldn't stop thinking, planning, plotting. Even as he sat there, his mind was working at frantic speed, urged on by all the uppers he'd taken. You couldn't be just a man in forest politics these days. There was too much to do, to process, to cope with, to be only merely human. Sir Robert unlocked and opened the secret door in his desk and looked at all the assorted colored pills laid out before him. All the colors of the rainbow to help him sleep and to wake up, to make him eloquent and to keep him sharp. But where was he in the midst of all this chemical brilliance? Was all he had left the choice of which pill to take next?
Oh.
He selected three black pills. Just a few downers to help him sleep, help him rest, soothe the clamoring thoughts in his head. In the end, he took four, washing them down with the last of the good brandy. He sat down on the edge of his unmade bed and slowly pulled off his boots. A delicious languor seeped through his body, sweeping away the cares of the day as he lay back on the bed, not bothering to undress any further. It felt so good to not have to care for a while. But still, tired as he was, with sleep tugging at him like a determined child, thoughts swirled sluggishly through his head. The three would-be Landsgraves had disappeared, which just had to be bad news. It meant they'd gone to ground and were even now busily plotting something he just knew he wouldn't approve of. But when all was said and done, they were amateurs. They shouldn't have been able to disappear so completely that even his network of spies and informers couldn't find them. There was always the possibility something had happened to them. The three Landsgraves had many enemies in Forest Castle. Well, if he was lucky, they were just dead. If he was really unlucky, they'd been handed over to Sir Vivian, that paragon of duty and honor, and were even now telling him everything they knew under intense interrogation. And there were all kinds of things they could be saying to incriminate their good friend and confidant, Sir Robert Hawke. And they owed him money.
Damn idiots.
He supposed he should be worried, but he couldn't seem to make the effort. Why look on the dark side? They'd probably turn up eventually. They always did. Like a case of the crabs that wouldn't go away. Maybe he should just cut them loose. He didn't need their money that badly. Well, actually, he did. But there had to be somewhere else he could find it. Somewhere without so many risks involved. It wasn't as if he had any expensive tastes to support. He never had the time or the inclination to develop any really interesting vices. Most of the money he collected went straight to the various democratic causes he supported. Democracy was about the only thing left he still believed in, even when he wasn't sure he believed in himself anymore.
Sir Robert Hawke, hero in my own mind.
It had been a long time since he'd considered himself anyone worth believing in. His thoughts were floating now, slowly drifting apart. The black pills were really kicking in. His old bed seemed luxuriously soft, and his body was too heavy to move. Some days, this fleeting moment of ease and pain between waking and sleeping was the only thing he had to look forward to all day. Sleep beckoned with a languorous finger, promising relief from all the cares of the day, and he was almost there.
Oh, go away!
Sir Robert's first clear thought was to ignore whoever it was and hope they'd take the hint and leave. The knock had that urgent, arrogant sound of a messenger whose message was so important he was prepared to go on knocking until he broke the door, or a merciful and sympathetic god struck him with a bolt of lightning. Since neither event seemed particularly likely in the immediate future, Sir Robert forced himself up and off the bed. It took him a while. His body now seemed to weigh a ton or more, and his feet seemed a long way from his head.
Yeah.
Fighting to keep his eyes open, he lurched across the room toward the door and leaned against it before unlocking and pulling it open. He was still leaning on the doorframe as he gave the messenger before him his best scowl.
This had better be important, or I swear I'm going to rip out your spleen and eat it right in front of you.
The royal messenger looked back at him entirely unmoved and handed Sir Robert a scroll closed and sealed with the Queen's personal seal. He accepted it automatically and looked at it numbly as the messenger looked him over with a critical eye.
I am required to wait for your answer, Sir Robert.
Keep your voice down. If you wake me all the way up, we'll both regret it.
He turned his back on the messenger and stumbled over to his desk. He had to grab the edge of the desk at the last moment to stop himself from falling, and he lowered himself carefully into his chair. He fumbled at the scroll's wax seal, his fingers numb and clumsy.
Bloody seal.
He should never have taken that many blacks. He scrabbled at the wax seal for embarrassingly long moments, then finally was able to break it, tearing the thick paper in the process. The messenger watched it all from the doorway, stonily silent. Sir Robert made himself concentrate on the handwritten note. It was a summons from the Queen. He was commanded to attend a special court. Right now, if not sooner. No excuses accepted. Since it was written in Felicity's own hand rather than that of a court scribe, it meant this was a private summons. Secret. Sir Robert felt stupidly pleased that he was able to follow all the implications of that. A special secret court session meant that important things would be said, things he needed to know. So, of course, he had to go. Except, was this good news or bad? A commendation or an accusation? Just how much did the Queen know about all the things he'd said and done in his time? His thoughts whirled now, and he had no idea how long he sat there, staring blankly at the torn scroll.
Ahem.
Nah?
Of course, a reply was expected. He had to say something.
Tell Her Majesty, I'm delighted to, be delighted to accept her kind invitation. I'll be there.
Sir Robert could have wept. It wasn't fair. He was in no shape to deal with this. Why did the Queen have to send for him now? He needed to sleep. He swayed in his chair.
Jesus, you're a mess. Come as you are, if you can.
He turned and left. Wincing in pain at the loud sound of the door, Sir Robert fumbled out his keys with numb fingers, searching for the key that would open the secret door in his desk. He needed more pills. Something to wake him up, to make him sharp again. Something to make him the man he used to be. Sir Vivian brought the Lady of the Lake to one of his favorite and most secret places, an indoor forest glade deep in the heart of the North Wing. It was a long way off the beaten track, so far off that only a few people even knew it existed. Sir Vivian was happy for it to stay that way. The glade was entirely self-sufficient, an oasis of greenery inside the cold stone of the castle. There were trees and shrubs, grassy lawns and mossy banks around a slender, chuckling river that ran to and from nowhere. All centered around a delicate stone fountain whose gushing waters rose high into the air. Rich scents of earth and grass and growing things hung heavy on the air. The trees hung down with the weight of summer greenery. The glade was a peaceful place. Sir Vivian came here when he needed quiet. A place to clear his thoughts and listen to his own heart. He'd been a bit shy about revealing his special place to the lady, but she loved it immediately. She was currently manifesting within the fountain's waters, standing tall and proud as water streamed down from her outstretched hands.
This is a wonderful place. I don't remember it from when I was last here.
You wouldn't? It's only 12 years old. During the Demon War, goblins came to live in the castle for a while after their home, the Tanglewood, was destroyed by the encroaching Long Night. They created this place from cuttings they brought with them. This is all that's left of the Tanglewood now. The goblins are long gone, and given their obnoxious nature, I can't say anyone really misses them. But they left this behind, and anyone who could fashion and appreciate a small miracle like this couldn't be all bad.
A soft, gentle sprinkling of rain fell out of nowhere like a delicate haze on the air. Just cool enough to be refreshing. The glade blossomed as the rain touched it, and the grass became almost unbearably green. Flowers burst out of everywhere in bright and glorious colors. Sir Vivian looked about him, awed and wondering, and happily enchanted.
That's more like it. You look quite handsome when you smile. You were always a grim and brooding one, as I recall. but that was many years ago. Haven't you found anything to be happy about since?
Not really.
Sir Vivian's smile was gone as quickly as it had come.
How did you recognize me? I am much changed from what I once was.
I'd know you anywhere. I recognized your smile. You're always very special to me. I would have died for you.
I'd much rather you lived, my true and gallant hero. I've heard a lot about you.
Sir Vivian grimaced and half turned away from her.
Then you know I was a traitor. I betrayed my king.
And was pardoned by another king. Look at me, Vivian. You have done many remarkable things. You were a hero at Tower Rouge, and a hero again to the peasants you fought beside in the Demon War. They still sing songs about your exploits. The forest land still stands in part because of you. You should be proud of what you have achieved.
I always wanted to be a warrior, to prove myself worthy by my own actions. But now even that is being taken away from me. I thought the Walking Man had come for Queen Felicity. I couldn't trust my swordsmanship to stop him, so I used magic against him. The magic I inherited from my notorious parents. It didn't stop Lament, of course. I doubt even the Magus could stand against the Walking Man. But I had to try to protect my queen. And now the magic I never wanted runs loose within me. A constant, burning temptation. It's almost a physical need to use that power to make the world make sense, by force if necessary. To shake some sense into the world, whether it wants it or not.
And into people, too.
Especially people.
I feel the same way sometimes. I felt it when I was alive, and even more when I was reborn in this form. When I see people abuse the land or each other, and the anger rises within me, I could make it rain for 50 years, cause the rivers to break their banks and flood the fields and drive the people from the forest. But I don't. My role is to protect the land and those who live in it. It would be wrong for me to interfere too much, for then people would grow dependent on me and learn nothing. And so I do the most good I can, quietly, from a distance, with the minimum of magic. I wouldn't have revealed my existence even now, but events here are drawing to a climax, and at the end, I will be needed to do what no one else can.
Your life, or afterlife, has purpose and meaning. I'm still looking for mine. By my age, most men have found a shape or direction to their lives. They have a job they're good at, an end to aim for, or at least the simple pleasures of wife and family. I have none of those things. I was a hero once, but it wasn't at all what I thought it would be. I found something to fight for when I was defending the peasants against the demons, but it didn't last. I left them for what I thought was a greater cause. But defending them against the court proved too much for my limited diplomatic abilities. And the one thing I'd always set my heart on, becoming High Commander of the Castle Guard and personally responsible for the safety of my king, turned out to be the one thing that damned me. I failed. And in failing, I betrayed another king. He died because I wasn't up to the job he gave me. My life is so empty, lady. So cold. Nothing and no one to care for or to care for me. This isn't the life I hoped and fought for when I was young. And still had dreams. You've been dead, lady. What was it like? Would I find peace there at last?
You know your trouble. You need to get out and meet some girls.
Vivian looked shocked.
I'm sorry, Vivian. I know you were expecting something more mystical. But sometimes the obvious answers are the right ones after all. You need to open your eyes and look around you, Vivian. The answer could be closer than you think. Now stand up straight and make yourself look presentable. There's a royal messenger on his way with something important to tell you.
As he scrambled to his feet and tugged more or less randomly at his uniform, the lady merged into the waters of the fountain, her shape disappearing until there was only water running smoothly from stone mouths.
Enter!
A messenger entered uncertainly at Sir Vivian's command. His eyes widened as he took in the green glade, and then he saw Sir Vivian and marched smartly forward to stand before him. They exchanged formal bows, and then Sir Vivian gave the messenger his best glare.
I thought I gave orders I wasn't to be disturbed.
The messenger nodded, unmoved by the glare.
Sorry to intrude, High Commander, but I bear a personal message from the Queen. I am to wait for your answer.
Sir Vivian nodded grimly and all but snatched the scroll from the messenger's hands. He broke the wax seal with a quick twist and quickly scanned the message. Special court, your earliest convenience, matters of urgency, no exceptions. Just what he didn't need right now. He rolled up the scroll and stuck it in his belt. A summons from the Queen in her own handwriting was unfortunately too important to be ignored or even put off.
Tell the Queen I will be with her directly.
The messenger nodded before leaving as quickly as dignity allowed. Even royal messengers had more sense than to hang around Sir Vivian when he was in one of his moods. The Lady of the Lake reformed in the fountain.
You're frowning again, Vivian.
With good cause. The Queen wouldn't be sending for me this urgently unless things were really getting out of hand. Why did you vanish like that?
Because the less people know of my presence here, the better for the moment.
Why are you here? Why return now after all these years?
Because I'm needed. Just like you, Sir Vivian. Go and see Felicity. She needs you now. I can't come with you, and you mustn't tell anyone who I am, or rather was, and try not to worry so much. Things aren't nearly as out of control as they might seem.
Then she was gone again, and the fountain was just a fountain. Sir Vivian headed for the door. He somehow knew she wouldn't be reappearing anytime soon. The sense of her presence was gone from the glade. It had been good to see her again, talk with her, but...
Just when you think things can't become any more complicated, fate starts dealing from the bottom of the deck. Maybe I'll just use my magic after all, turn everybody into frogs, and take a long holiday somewhere more peaceful.
He surprised himself with his laugh. Then Vivian left his precious private glade to attend his queen and his duty one more time. Elsewhere in the castle, the young witch Tiffany was taking the dog Chappie for a walk, and it would be difficult to say who was the more embarrassed. Tiffany went to the trouble of conjuring up a leather collar and lead for him, but he took one look, snatched them out of her hand, and ate them.
I've tasted better.
Well, let me just tell you, Sir Dog, with or without a leash, we will take a walk.
Tiffany was still determined that a walk was in order, and her iron will wore Chappie down to the point where he went along with it just so she'd stop talking at him. They went for a walk, side by side, each grimly determined to outlast the other. Chappie stared straight ahead and pretended she wasn't with him, which was difficult because she insisted on keeping up a stream of chatter.
Chappie, you best give me an answer. I'll just keep asking the question until you do.
Chappie glared at everyone they met along the way. People took to shrinking back against walls as they passed. Some even turned and ran, particularly when Tiffany tried to stop and chat with them.
Honestly, I don't need to be taken for walkies. I agreed to protect you because Chance made me promise, but we could do that just as well behind a locked door, preferably somewhere not too far from the kitchens, because right now I'm so hungry I could eat an entire horse, including the hooves and the liver, and I hate liver. And so would you if you thought about what function it serves in the body. Why is it that everything that's supposed to be good for you always tastes so absolutely foul?
Same reason that medicine does. How else could you be sure it was doing you good? Everything in the world has to balance out, even symbolically. Perhaps especially symbolically.
Now, it's thinking like that that makes my head hurt. Look, can we please stop for a minute? I need to have a good scratch and lick my balls.
Chappie! You can't do that in front of me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know it was your turn.
Ugh.
They both stopped so they could glare at each other thoroughly.
Every day, Chappie, I pray none of you is rubbing off on Alan.
Oh, that's funny. Every day he prays that part of him could be rubbing
off
again. Chappie! Well, I do wish the two of you would just have sex and get it over with. You'd both be a lot less frustrated and distracted. And maybe then you'd stop taking it out on me, You do both know about sex, don't you? I mean, you don't need me to explain the ins and outs to you, so to speak.
I can't believe I'm having this conversation. This kind of thing was very definitely not covered in the briefing on the outside world that I was given before I left the academy.
Oh, it's a pity they didn't teach you more about self-preservation.
The dog scratched at his ribs with relish.
Then I wouldn't have to be here at all.
Oh. I don't need protecting.
Ah, humans always say that and they're always wrong. Show any one of you a path signposted to danger or evil forces and sudden death this way, and there you go, charging straight down it. Usually shouting some nonsense about duty and honor and all those other things that get you killed at an early age. Any truly rational creature would do the sensible thing and head for the nearest horizon in the opposite direction. Personally, I'm surprised any of you have the sense to come in out of the rain.
Look, let's not quarrel. I hate quarreling.
Probably because you're so bad at it. If you really want to make up, find me something to eat. I'm not fussy. Animal, mineral, vegetable, I'll scarf the lot and gnaw on the bones. Hell, I don't even care if it's still kicking a bit.
No snacks. You're already far too heavy for your size. When I've got a minute, I'll work out a nice diet plan for you with lots of healthy roughage.
Oh, God! Chance, please come back. All is forgiven. Just come back and save me from this terrible woman. I don't know what is seizing you anyway.
He paused and looked at Tiffany's chest.
Well, I guess I do, but frankly, it baffles me.
You care about Alan, don't you?
Of course. I approve of him. He'd make a good dog. If I could just wean him off this duty and honor crap, we could probably have a really good life together.
You understand duty. You said yourself you're only looking after me because you promised Alan you would.
Well, that's different.
How?
It just is, all right?
This was a really bad moment for the royal messenger to appear suddenly out of a side passage right in front of them. Furious at letting himself be distracted from a potential threat, Chappie launched himself at the startled messenger, knocked him flat on his back, and stood on his chest. All the color went out of the messenger's face. The messenger's whimper cheered Chappie.
You have 30 seconds to tell me who you are and what you want, and then I'm gonna bite off your nose and swallow it.
Oh, I'm the Queen's messenger. I've got a scroll right here.
Sir Vivian got to the court first, and was surprised, and not a little shocked, to find that none of his people were present to guard and protect the Queen. The great double doors were unlocked, but the only person there to open them was the Queen's companion, Callie. Sir Vivian nodded briefly to her as she let him in. He'd never had much to do with Callie. The warrior woman was part of Felicity's inner circle, to which he had very definitely never been privy. Sir Vivian had always been King Harold's man. Still, he approved of Callie in a distant sort of way. She was very protective of the Queen and the infant King, and took no nonsense from anyone, least of all Harold's people. He gave her plenty of room as she advanced quickly on the throne and bowed to the Queen.
Your Majesty, please allow me to send for some of my people. You are not secure here.
Hardly anyone knows I'm here. Secrecy has always been my best protection. Besides, I've got you and Callie. I'm sure I can rely on you two to keep order. Now, we can't start till everyone's here, so be a good High Commander of the Guard and go and do something protective somewhere else for a while, so I can think in peace. I've got a lot on my mind.
Could Your Majesty at least tell me what this is all about?
Not really, no. Be patient with your Queen, Sir Vivian. She's making this all up as she goes along. Go and talk with Callie. She's as nervous about this as you are, so go and annoy each other and let me concentrate. That's an order.
Sir Vivian swallowed several icy and cutting remarks that would have made him feel much better, but which somehow he knew would do nothing to improve the situation. Vivian bowed formally to the Queen and walked stiffly back to join Callie by the closed double doors. They stood side by side for a while, not looking at each other.
You know, There are times when I feel a Royal Majesty's disposition could be greatly improved by a swift kick to the behind.
I think that's probably true of most royalty. They're never more trouble than when they stop thinking. I take it she hasn't discussed this special court session with you either.
Not so you'd notice. And she usually runs most things by me, even when she knows I won't approve. Perhaps especially then. She knows I always have her best interests at heart. But she put this particular piece of insanity together by herself. All I know for sure is that she sent out personal invitations to a few select movers and shakers for a private little chat. You're one of them. Oh, what good she thinks more talking is going to do at this late date?
Exactly. We're well past the point where talking can change anything. Everyone's drawn their own line in the sand. And now they're just waiting for the first person to put one foot wrong. I wish the Queen would confide in me more. How can I protect her properly if I don't know which directions the threats are likely to be coming from?
Don't take it personally. She must trust you, or she wouldn't have called you here to be her defender. There are a lot of other people she could have called who are noticeable here by their absence.
Does she trust me? I've never been sure after I failed her husband.
Of course she trusts you.
Callie met Sir Vivian's cold eyes directly.
You're one of the few people left in the castle she knows she can depend on. You're the hero of Tower Rouge, a peasant's defender. Last I heard, there were 27 ballads and 8 plays about you. No one blames you for the king's death. Even the majors couldn't protect the king from whoever killed him. No one in the whole castle thinks you failed except you. Believe me, the queen trusts you. And so do I.
She smiled at him suddenly.
I'm something of a fan, you know. Even before I came here with Felicity, I'd read all the books on the Tower Rouge siege. They're bestsellers in Hillsdown. You're as well known there as Prince Rupert and Princess Julia.
I'm surprised I'm not seen as a villain in Hillsdown.
We admire warriors. And you've always been one of my special heroes.
Sir Vivian could feel his cheeks warming just a little.
You don't want to believe anything you read in books. And the songs are even less accurate. The real hero of Tower Rouge was my brother, Gawain. I just stayed to keep him company.
Balls! I've read the accounts written by Hillsdown survivors of that siege. I said you were unstoppable with a sword in your hand. You never wavered despite the impossible odds. That they did everything but hack you to pieces, and still they couldn't get you to retreat or surrender. Your name is another word for courage and duty and honour in Hillsdown.
Just shows you what distance can add to a legend.
Why do you run yourself down like that? There are heroes with ballads to their names who haven't done half the things you've done. You held Hobbs Gateway when all but you and your brother fled. No one would have called you a coward if you'd left too. Any general would have said the tower couldn't be held against such odds. But you two stood against a whole damned army and would not be moved.
It wasn't like that.
All right. What was it like? Really? Tell me. I've always wanted to know.
It all happened so quickly.
Held by Callie's intense gaze, Vivian never even considered not answering.
Everyone else was running, on horse or on foot, leaving behind anything that would slow them down, even their armor and weapons. They called themselves soldiers and they ran like rabbits. It was the sensible thing to do. Even our commander agreed. One small company couldn't hope to stand against the army that was coming. But Gawain wouldn't leave. He never even considered it, because he knew that if the tower fell, the Hillsdown forces would sweep right through Hobbs Gateway and on into the undefended heartland of the Forest Kingdom. Hundreds of small towns and villages at the mercy of a Hillsdown army baying for blood to avenge their recent string of defeats. The slaughter of helpless civilians would have been horrific. Gawain was convinced we could hold the tower, and whoever held Tower Rouge controlled access to Hobbs Gateway. I tried to talk him out of it, but he wouldn't be moved. He knew his duty, so I stayed with him, because he was my brother. I couldn't leave him to die alone. Perhaps, too, I was looking for a good death, a death that mattered even then. We rigged Tower Rouge with all kinds of deadfalls and booby traps so there was only one way they could come at us. And then we waited. The waiting was the hardest part. Then the Hillsdown force arrived. It was even bigger than we'd anticipated. The Hillsdown generals bet everything on one unexpected thrust, while the main forest army was occupied elsewhere. They hadn't allowed for two honest fools who thought duty and honor were more than just words. Gawain and I said goodbye to each other in case there wasn't time later, and he said he was proud of me. I was always proud of him. Then we took our positions to meet the first charge with our swords in hands. I don't remember much about the actual fighting. It all blurred together after a while. All the blood, and the dying, and the screams.
There wasn't time to be brave or to think about what was at stake. We just did what we had to. We made sure they could only come at us a few at a time, and we held them off for what seemed like forever. Sometimes I wonder if I'm still there, still fighting, and everything since has been a dream. Gawain and I fought side by side, even after the ground grew slippery with our own blood. I felt every sword and axe that hit me, but the pain was just something else to fight. I sometimes wonder if I still would have stood my ground if Gawain had been killed and there was only me left. But I think I would have. In my own way, I have always tried to be an honorable man. You know the rest. Inspired by word of our stand, the forest reinforcements broke all records racing across the land to get to us in time. They threw back the Hillsdown army, and the land was saved. And no one was more surprised than Gawain and I to find we were still alive at the end of it, and we'd held Tower Rouge and Hobbs Gateway. We never thought of ourselves as heroes, just soldiers doing the job we had sworn to do. Some years later, the king ceded Hobbs Gateway to Hillsdown as a part of a diplomatic deal to rationalize the border. So, what was it all for, really?
Duty and honor and courage. What else is there?
I wish I saw things as simply as you.
Real heroes never see themselves as anything special. That's part of what makes them a hero in the first place. I've been waiting for a chance to talk to you ever since I came here. For what with one thing and another, it never seemed the right time. And I didn't just want to seek you out like some simpering fan. I'm sure you've seen enough of that kind in your time.
I wouldn't have minded. You have a reputation, too, as a brave and canny warrior, and a selfless defender of the Queen. I'm sure we would have found something to talk about.
You've always been my hero. Only unlike most of the heroes in the songs, you really did do most of the things they said you did.
I've done other things, too. Less worthy things.
I know. Harold told Felicity and she told me. But even your betrayal arose out of your honour. You'll need to protect the land. Harold knew that. That's why he pardoned you, made you High Commander. Because he needed someone he could trust to care for the land and protect it. Even from him.
For a long moment, Sir Vivian looked at Callie, seeing himself through her eyes. And through her words, allowed himself some of the comfort he had never felt able to justify giving himself. He looked into her steady gaze, approving but not hero-struck, and thought suddenly that she was attractive in an unconventional way. And her smile, free and open, touched him in a way no others had since he was a young man being smiled on by Queen Eleanor. He smiled back at Callie, an unexpected warmth from a cold man. And something stirred in both their hearts, and both of them knew it.
The magic. The magic you wielded at court. That was something new. Impressive. Unexpected. Have you always had it?
Perhaps, but I wasn't able to use it until fairly recently. I never wanted it, you see. I was afraid it would make me like my parents. Most people inherit weak eyes or receding hairlines. I got magic. But magic corrupts. Makes it too easy to get your own way. With magic, you never have to earn anything. So you never really value anything. Magic makes it far too easy to treat people as pawns, as things. So I made myself into a soldier, a warrior. And what I won honestly, by my own efforts. So that people would see me for what I was, and not for what I was expected to be.
I know how you feel. I always wanted to be a warrior. Ever since I first heard songs of valor as a child sitting by the family fire. I wanted to be someone, to make a difference in the world. To be important because I earned it. Not because of who I happen to be married to. To be someone in my own right, not what others thought I should be, just because I was a woman. We've both had to fight all our lives just to be seen as ourselves.
And that's why we've both been so alone. Because we insisted on living the life we chose, and not what others tried to choose for us. Because we wouldn't compromise, either in what we thought we should be, or in how we wanted others to see us.
I knew you'd understand. We don't have to be alone, you know.
No. Not anymore.
They were both smiling now, their faces so close they could feel each other's breath. And then they both looked around, startled. They stepped back and drew their swords, professional soldiers again. Sir Vivian made sure he had room to work in if need be, and then nodded for Callie to unlock and open the doors. Sir Robert Hawke almost fell through the gap, caught his balance with an effort, drew himself up to his full height, and nodded cheerfully to Sir Vivian.
Oh,
His face was flushed, and his eyes were very wide. Sir Vivian knew immediately what was wrong with him, and Sir Robert knew that Sir Vivian knew, and he really didn't care. He was flying. He was dressed in his best, but the loud colors he'd chosen clashed hideously, and his jerkin was buttoned wrong. There were beads of sweat on his forehead, and his hands moved back and forth uneasily until he noticed and stuck them firmly behind his belt. He'd taken a handful of wake-up pills to counteract the downers he'd taken, and right now the various drugs were fighting it out to see which could screw him up the most thoroughly. He was holding himself together through sheer willpower, ignoring what the pills were doing to his body so he could concentrate on keeping his thoughts clear and focused. He met Sir Vivian's disapproving glare. Sir Robert didn't trust himself to bow successfully, so he just nodded to Sir Vivian and set off across the wide open court.
Oh, one foot in front of the other.
He held his head high and kept his gaze fixed on the Queen on her throne. If he could just get to her and find out what this meeting was all about, he'd have something specific to concentrate on, to center his whirling mind. The court seemed impossibly vast as he stumbled on, like those rooms in uneasy dreams where the far wall seems to recede endlessly away. It was getting hard to tell left from right or forward from backward, and his eyes were so intent and focused now that they ached. He stopped at what he hoped was a respectful distance from the throne. He managed a fairly normal bow, though the effort brought fresh beads of sweat popping out on his brow. He smiled at the Queen, hoping it looked more normal than it felt. He was scared. He'd never felt so out of control before. He'd taken far too many pills, and his body was too weakened by long abuse to be able to cope. It was like trying to ride a horse that had suddenly gone mad. And all the time, his chemically stimulated thoughts were dashing frantically back and forth inside his head, bouncing off the walls of his skull, producing and discarding separate plans over and over again, while his mouth struggled with a simple greeting to the Queen.
Your Majesty!
He felt horribly helpless, trapped inside a body that no longer obeyed him, while his thoughts felt like somebody else's. His mind was slowly slipping its moorings and drifting away on a dark, dark sea.
Thank you for coming on such short notice, Sir Robert. I have also sent for your associates, the three putative Landgraves, though I'm not sure if they'll be able to join us. Apparently no one's seen hide nor hair of them in some time.
Don't know where they are myself just now.
Sir Robert swayed slightly on his feet.
Ooh. Still, they're no great loss. Dangerous, treacherous scum, always plotting something. You wouldn't believe what they wanted me to do. Completely untrustworthy. Unlike me, of course. They'd work my balls off for the land, for the people. Even deal with those I can't stand, like the Landgraves. Oh, if you only knew what I saved you from by dealing with those scumbags. Taking their money, listening to their stupid, treacherous plans.
He heard his voice running on, and he couldn't stop it. His mind was lagging dangerously behind his mouth. By the time he realized he was admitting not only to links with traitors, but knowledge of their plans, it was already too late. He forced his mouth shut, his hands clenching into fists as he fought for self-control, his fingernails digging deep into his palms. The pain helped to steady him a little, until the shock hit him. He'd just given the Queen enough cause to have him dragged away and examined under truth spell. And once they started digging for secrets, they'd never stop. Why had he come here? He should never have come here. Not in this condition. He'd betrayed himself and all the people who believed in him through his own damned weakness. The Queen leaned forward on her throne and looked at him closely. Sir Robert wondered if he'd have the strength of will to take his own life rather than betray his cause.
Go home, Sir Robert. Go home. You're not well.
Sir Robert flushed with shame and couldn't bring himself to do anything more than nod in agreement. Callie opened the courtroom doors to admit the witch Tiffany and the dog Chappie. Tiffany brushed straight past Callie and Sir Vivian, striding across the court with Chappie at her side. She took up a determined stance right before the Queen, completely ignoring Sir Robert.
I got here as fast as I could, Your Majesty. You mustn't stay here. It's not safe for you. Powerful magics are stirring somewhere in the castle. I can feel them. Though as yet, something prevents me from seeing their actual location or nature.
You must guard yourself. I sense danger, terrible danger.
She's right. Something bad's coming. I can almost smell it.
Calm yourselves, my friends. I'm as safe here as anywhere. And I have summoned the mages to attend this court, too.
I don't trust him.
No one does, dear. But he is terribly useful, especially at moments like this.
The doors open to admit Alan Chance, the quester.
Alan!
Tiffany ran back across the court to take him in her arms, wrapping him in a happy hug that squeezed all the breath right out of him. Chappie romped around them, tail wagging furiously, jumping up at them both until Chance freed a hand to pat him on the head and tug at his ear.
I was so worried about you. I could feel you drawing closer and closer to horrible danger, but you were too far away from me to be able to warn you.
It's all right, Tiff.
Chance carefully disengaged himself from Tiffany while very conscious of the Queen's amused gaze.
We'll talk later. Right now I have important information for the Queen.
He approached the throne, Tiffany and Chappie sticking close behind him, bowed formally to Felicity, and ignored Sir Robert after a quick glance.
Your Majesty, I have to report that Jericho Lament, the Walking Man, together with Captains Hawk and Fisher and the Seneschal, have broached the Mages' wards and entered the inverted cathedral.
I knew something bad was happening. Oh, Alan, how could you have let them do something so stupid?
One doesn't say no to the Walking Man, Tiff. Trust me, one just doesn't. Besides, someone had to go inside and take a look eventually, and personally, I'd back Lament and Hawk and Fisher against anything up to and including a demon army. In fact, I think I'd feel sorry for the demons. No, Tiff, whatever they find, I'm sure they're eminently qualified to deal with it.
The Queen turned to Tiffany.
Is this the magical upheaval you were sensing? Is this the threat you were worried about?
The young witch scowled, shaking her head slowly.
No, I don't think so. It feels closer than that.
The Queen looked sharply at Chance.
You should have consulted with me before allowing Captains Hawk and Fisher to enter the inverted cathedral. I needed them here. I'm going to need all the support I can muster for this meeting, considering whom I've invited.
I am your Majesty's protector now and always. And I see Sir Vivian's here, too. I assure you, you will be quite safe in our hands.
Hey, don't forget me!
I wouldn't know how!
The Queen could see where that was going and butted in quickly.
I have heard that Captains Hawk and Fisher were actually attacked earlier, even though they were under my express protection. Do you know anything of this, Sir Quester? In particular, who might be behind such an outrageous attack? Hawk and Fisher represent my authority while they are investigating my husband's death. And an attack on them is an attack on me. I also require to know why you didn't inform me of this outrage as soon as it happened. Well?
Everyone looked at everyone else. No one wanted to be the first to say what they were all thinking. In the end, Sir Robert spoke up, on the grounds that he couldn't be in more trouble if he tried.
Well, we all knew, Your Majesty, but no one wanted to be the one to point the finger. Given that there is no real evidence...
Who did it? Who would dare strike at me in this way?
I'm sorry, but the hand behind the attack had to be your father's. No one else could or would have dared such an affront to your authority.
Felicity sank slowly back into her throne.
Oh, damn. I didn't want to think he'd be that blatant. I have sent for him. In fact, he was the first name on my list. I'm surprised he's not already here. He does so hate to miss out on things.
Perhaps he feels he is no longer bound to obey Your Majesty's instructions.
Right. If he was going to be here, he'd be here by now.
Who else is there still to come?
Just the mages. Where the hell is the man when I need him?
Right here. There's no need to shout. I'm not deaf.
Almost everyone was startled by the mages' sudden appearance before the throne. He appeared right beside Sir Robert, who was too out of it to be shocked, and just stared at the mages owlishly. Chance had to grab Chappie quickly by the ear to hold him back. Tiffany raised one of her hands in a warding gesture that the mages didn't even bother to acknowledge. Kelly and Sir Vivian left the double doors and hurried forward, swords in hand. The mages smiled amiably about him. He looked much as he always did, except that perhaps his face and eyes were just a little less vague than usual.
What is it this time, Your Majesty? I'm really very busy just at the moment.
Busy at what?
My nerves.
The shaman had materialized suddenly beside the magus. The creature crouching at his side, he and Chappie taking each other's measure. Callie and Sir Vivian moved quickly to stand on either side of the throne, glaring at the new arrivals with their swords at the ready. It was getting rather crowded around the throne now, but no one had any intention of backing down for anyone else. The magus and the shaman regarded each other coldly while the queen glared at both of them.
I didn't summon you to my court, Sir Shaman.
I go where I choose, you know that. I'm here because it's necessary. Nothing less would bring me to this place.
By now, Chance, Tiffany, and Chappie had taken up positions before the throne, too.
Shaman, that abomination is dangerous. I demand that you remove it from court, or we'll do it the hard way.
You don't object to the Magus's cloak?
Well, that's not alive.
Shows how much you know. That cloak is just as alive and twice as dangerous as my poor creature. It doesn't matter anyway. Wherever I go, the creature goes too. I'd feel far too vulnerable in this castle without my protector. Everyone needs someone they can depend on. He's quite safe as long as I am.
Doesn't anyone mind what I think? I'm only the queen.
Exactly.
The shaman turned his clay-marked face to glare fiercely on the magus, who didn't so much as bat an eye.
You're the reason I'm here, magus. You and that bloody rift you opened. You have to shut it down right now. It's a danger to the whole forest kingdom. All the time it's operating, it's leaking wild magic into the world.
Yes, it is.
You admit it? Your monstrous creation is undermining the very structure of our reality.
Quite correct. Such leakage from the rift is a necessary byproduct. The only alternative would be to shut down the rift permanently. But is everyone here ready to shut down something so massively useful? Is the Forest Kingdom ready to go back to being just a backwater cousin again? To give up all its new comforts and scientific advances? Are the people willing to be cut off from the current flow of political beliefs and philosophies?
The magus looked unhurriedly about him, taking in their torn, undecided faces.
You've all come such a long way since I opened the rift and made trade between North and South practical. Surely you don't wish to become barbarians again, based on the fears of a scaremongering hedge wizard with a grudge.
Sir Robert turned on the shaman.
I thought you believed in the people! Shut down the rift and you cut off all democratic support from the South. You'd have us betray everything we believe over a little magical pollution? There's always been some wild magic in the land.
Never this much.
The shaman matched Sir Robert glare for glare.
If the rift's continuing pollution isn't stopped, wild magic will grow and spread until it's powerful enough to undermine and then destroy the world and anything we might recognize as reality. Have you all forgotten the horror of the long night so soon? Would you have the blue moon back again, shining its awful light over the kingdom?
The blue moon's return is just a rumor. And there's no sign of the long night spreading. The dark woods boundaries haven't moved an inch in 12 years. I have people stationed there watching the dark wood constantly.
She's right. I was there just recently. Nothing's changed. The long night is quiet, and there's no sign anywhere that the demons are on the move. None of our magic users have produced any evidence that the blue moon is coming back.
I saw the Darkwood return in a vision.
There could be many interpretations to such a vision. Don't concern yourself over dreams, my child.
Wild magic has always been bad news for the forest. Wild magic, high magic, chaos magic, none of it worth the problems it brings. The wild magic of the long night would have destroyed us all if it had not been for Prince Rupert and Princess Julia. In the end, it's always people who solve problems, not magic.
Try and concentrate on the matter at hand, Vivian. The rift is unbalancing the natural order in the world. I can feel it. Something awful is sitting at the threshold of our world, waiting to come through and trample on everything we believe in and care for. I lived through the long night,
saw good men and women die over and over. I won't stand aside and see that happen again. If you won't shut down the Rift Magus, I will.
Will you really? Now that is interesting. I hadn't realized you were so powerful. But then there's a lot about you that people don't know, isn't there, Sir Shaman?
The shaman said nothing, his fierce eyes locked on the Magus's. Everyone else backed away a few paces, even the creature. They could all feel a magical presence building right there in the court between the shaman and the Magus, a rising potentiality of magic and violence and power building, building, ready to be unleashed. The two men seemed suddenly larger, more real than they had been only moments before. Sir Vivian could feel his own magic stirring within him, eager to be let loose, and he fought it down.
So you're finally ready to reveal yourself, Shaman. Do you really think you can stop me?
I learned much in my long years as a hermit. You'd be surprised what I can do if I set my mind to it.
It's not too late to stop this. Wild magic isn't necessarily a bad thing, except to the established order. It doesn't take sides. Maybe the Forest Kingdom could do with a little chaos, to shake things up, to bring about social and political change. You, of all people, should know that real, lasting change is only ever brought about by sacrifice.
Your words are just a distraction. Wild magic is a threat to human reason, to rationality itself. What's coming has nothing to do with how we live. It wants to change all the rules and create a new world where humanity might not be able to exist. I felt the effects of wild magic during the long night, seeing its horrors close up. You weren't here when the dark wood came flooding over all the land. Or were you?
Was the blue moon really such a bad thing? Look at all the heroes the Demon War produced. All the deeds of courage and self-sacrifice. Having a common enemy to fight against brought out the best in people. All right, a lot of people died, but people always die. For some people, the long night was the making of them, a second chance they might never have found for themselves. Isn't that right, Sir Vivian?
Sir Vivian looked briefly at Callie, then looked away.
Things were clearer then. You knew where you were. There was good and bad, light and dark. Our every decision took on mythical proportions. Everything's been so confused since then. And the darkness did make heroes out of men who might otherwise have just stumbled through their lives. But the price was too high. No amount of heroes is worth all the innocents who died horribly at the hands of demons. The long night must never come again, while we have the strength in our bodies to prevent it. No matter what it costs us.
King John would have shut down the rift. He knew all about poison gifts.
Yes. Yes, he did, didn't he? Such a pity he's not here now. But then all he ever really knew was how to die for his country, not how to put things right.
You don't talk about the king.
Sir Robert lurched forward to glare right into the Magus's face.
You know nothing about him. He led us against the demons. He was a hero!
Only because he died. Heroes are so much more convincing when they're dead. Mostly because it's so much easier to forget the faults of the nobly fallen. Look at you, for example, Sir Robert. A hero in the Demon War and a savior of the land. But what are you now? A minor functionary with a title that no one respects, chasing dreams of democracy, relying on pills to wake you up. Pills to get you through your day, and more pills so you can sleep at night. How far have you fallen, Robert Hawke? But you could still be what you used to be. Would you like that? Of course you would. Queen Felicity, allow me to demonstrate that the wild magic can be put to good use as well as evil. Observe.
He gestured grandly at Sir Robert, who bent over suddenly. Magic shot through his veins and exploded in his blood. All the drugs he'd dosed himself with over the years seemed to come shooting forth all at once. His whole body shook with the power of it. Sweat burst out of his pores, smelling rank and acid. As all traces of his drugs left his body by the quickest route, everyone before the throne drew back to give him plenty of room as the unpleasant purge proceeded. At the end, he was on all fours before his queen, wiping at his wet mouth with a shaking hand, feeling and smelling absolutely foul, but clear-eyed and sharp-minded for the first time in a long time. Sir Robert rose slowly to his feet as he glared at the magus.
What have you done to me?
What you didn't have the strength of will to do for yourself.
The magus gestured casually, and all the foulness Sir Robert's body had thrown out was suddenly gone.
The unpleasantness is only fleeting, I assure you. You are now pure in body, if not in spirit, and all your old strength is yours again. What will you do with it, I wonder? Well, aren't you going to say thank you?
I don't know. I haven't seen the price tag yet. Is this a gift or a bribe?
Oh, still so cynical. Perhaps a further demonstration is in order to show you what wonders the wild magic can perform. Let me turn back the clock for you, right before your eyes. Let me make whole again what time has broken.
Observe!
Suddenly, Sir Robert's old comrade in arms and his page stood beside him. Old before his time, trembling in every spindly limb, Page blinked confusedly about him. The magus gestured sharply. Page's body filled out into the muscular bulk of his prime. The bones in his back cracked loudly as he straightened up for the first time in years. His old sword hung from his hip, and he looked quickly around the court with his old warrior's clarity. Sir Robert saw his old friend restored, and his heart was so full he thought it would burst. He tried to say something to Page, but was stopped with a look.
Explanations can wait. Just point me at the villains.
Huh. Hell, just pick a direction.
They stood together, two fighting men in their prime again, ready for anything.